This is a Pinball News production.
Okay.
Squirrel.
I should probably use this, right? Yeah, it probably sounds better to get the word out. So, thanks for showing up.
That's loud.
It is? So we started this thing back in 2009, and we'll go through some of the history of the project. Whizbang Pinball was something that started because we felt like it. We were at a position in our career where it was time to do something a little different with the way we moved forward with pinball. And you got to remember, pinball in the 2000s took a kind of a hit, and Gary Stern did a great job of keeping it alive. And you know, we're all happy that he did that. And so in 2009, that's when Gary was actually just starting to bring things back too with an investor and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, we'll get started here. And you know, a lot of people kind of our fans understand Whizbang style. Whizbang style is a couple of knuckleheads that we are that just like to use our fifth grade sense of humor into the games that we produce. And we always tell people, when we have a good time making the game and designing the game, usually that translates to the end user having a good time playing the game. So far we've noticed this in our career, and we're real happy with that. That is a hand-built thinking cap that I built. It actually appears on a game called Strange Science. It is the brain transfer mechanism that we used on that game.
And wait, tell them about me.
we'll get to that. Hey, I'm holding the microphone.
All right.
Yeah, that's Dennis. we enjoy working in pairs. For the true fans of Greg and Dennis games, you'll understand that by just the two Elvira games that we worked on. Excuse me. We're fond of those games, and we loved working with Elvira, and she's just fun to work with, and we had a great time making those games. So the result showed, and you know, we had a good time with that. So before I worked with Dennis, I go all the way back to 1978 at Bally. Harlem Globetrotters was the first game that I worked on, and I was a kid. I was 23 years old, and I just couldn't believe that I had a full-time gig doing illustration for an in-house corporation like Bally. And I've got a number of games that, you know, I've gone through in my career. I just put Fathom on this slide to say, you know, thanks to everybody out there who thinks this is one of the finer packages in pinball. I can't, you know, I always hear so many compliments on that package, that art package, and it's a great playing game too. It's really mean, but it's a lot of fun to play, very challenging.
I have a question I don't think I've ever heard you mention. Is pinball something you pursued, or was it an art gig that you landed at?
It was an art gig that I landed at. When I graduated from college, I worked at a point-of-purchase advertising house, and I learned about point-of-purchase advertising. And when you think about it, pinball is very much about point of purchase. You see the back glass from across the room, and it attracts you over, and then if you play the game, at least the artwork got you over to the game to insert that first quarter, dollar, 75 cents, whatever the case may be, and the rest the game takes over and generates income due to you know, the playability and the fun factor. So yeah, I hadn't focused on it, but I knew it was there, and I would read Dave Christensen's name hidden in his artwork early on, and I'd be like, wow, there's people that actually do this for a living. I wish I could do that someday. And it just serendipitously worked out that I was able to land a gig there through Kevin O'Connor, because I worked with him for a brief amount of time at that point of purchase house. So I've also worked with other designers. Dennis and I are not tethered at the hip or anything weird like that. So we both have worked with other artists and other designers. And you know, Steve Ritchie, I've said this before at shows that I've done. Steve said, hey, I want to work with you, but I don't want you to do any of that funny stuff. Because he goes, you always put funny stuff in your artwork. I said, oh, you mean entertainment? You don't want any entertainment from me? So we worked it out. He chose Star Trek, and I said, oh, that's perfect, because it's not that funny. So sorry to any Star Trek fans here. I apologize for that, but you know, I have to get my digs into Steve every once in a while. We have a good relationship, and you know, he's fun to work with.
Speaking of Star Trek, have any of you been on the elevators? Don't the doors sound like Star Trek?
It's just the center elevator.
Just the center one is the most, yeah.
That's funny. And then we worked again together on No Fear, which was kind of cool because I was able to bring some funny stuff to No Fear. So, again, a very Steve challenging game. Brutal, mean, but fun, exciting, fast. Everything that Steve Ritchie game should be, and with a little bit of the humor from my side of the camp. So I thought we worked pretty well together on that and got a good game together. And then, of course, the end of pinball for Williams and Bally was the Pinball 2000 project, Revenge from Mars being the first of the two games that we did. We were very proud of that moment. The game is, I still love playing that game. It's interesting to look at. We thought it would bring a whole new audience to pinball because of the video screen. And, you know, when my nephew was younger, he would come over and play the games I've had in my basement, and he would always gravitate towards the Revenge from Mars because of the video screen. So we hoped that this would have been the savior of pinball, but as history has it, it wasn't. So
can you go back to that and tell the Edsel story?
Oh, the Edsel story. So some of you may have heard the Edsel story. When we were designing the game, our CEO, Neil Nicastro, was not sure if this was going to save pinball. And he would bring customers, distributors up to engineering to view progress on the game. And I overheard him telling a distributor, a very major distributor at the time, that this could save pinball, or it could be the Edsel of pinball. And so after I heard that and understood the fact that he totally wasn't convinced that this was going to do it, I ended up putting an Edsel on the lower left-hand corner of the back glass with the giant Martian crushing it. You know, I just had to do that. We, you know, as pinball artists, we like to put things into pinball art when we can. With most licenses, we can't. We're not allowed to, you know, do anything derivative or hidden. So when we do our own stuff, we enjoy putting more and more elements into the game. So while one person is playing, the other person is entertained by whatever they see on the back glass or play field. Something I miss. So let's talk about Dennis for like 10 seconds. So Dennis, he came to Bally from Ohio, and he was a product designer by schooling. And I'll let him tell you a little bit about what got his foot in the door.
I lived in Columbus, and I went to Ohio State, majored in product design. And in our senior year, they let us pick our own project. And I wanted to do a modern, futuristic pinball cabinet, because they hadn't changed. They still haven't changed. They still don't look too modern. That's why I love doing Wonelli, because it's totally different. But so I used to go to the arcades and play a lot of pinball, telling myself I was doing research. And but this cabinet had a lot of unique features that games didn't have. It was, so you can see, so I built a model, and I got an A++++ on that project. That was pretty exciting. So then I had to have back surgery, so I couldn't take my design courses for another year. So during the summer, I built a full-size game, thinking maybe I could show it to a pinball company and maybe get a job. I took it to Schaefer Distributing in Columbus and took pictures of it next to regular games. And so what I did in this, you can see the slanted area at the back of where the play field would be, is where I would have all the scoring, because if you look at the game next to it, the scoring was still all over the back glass, taking up art space, and also very difficult to reference when you're playing the game. So, and then I also had the black area between the back box and the cabinet is where the speakers were going to be, because at that time all the speakers were in the bottom of the cabinet, just directing the sound to the floor. The art department didn't like it because I made the back box real small, but that could have been made bigger. The one on the right is my actual model, and after I was working at Williams for a while, I took Demolition Man artwork and just glued it on it, so that's why that has Demolition Man artwork on it. Okay. And then, I took the cabinet to Bally, and I got hired. Chuck Farmer was the president of the Bally Pinball Division at the time, and he hired me. And he had been president of Schaefer Distributing in Columbus, so that was the connection that I think actually got me into Bally. And so then I got laid off after a year. But the good thing was I met my wife there, and got laid off after a year. I floated around for a while, don't know what I did. But then Bally moved to a new building.
Franklin Park.
And I brought in an idea for a game called Special Force. And so that was my very first pinball game. They hired me back, and that's my very first pinball game.
And of course, you know, he's got a storied career behind him, and you know, one of the cooler games from that he did with Stern, in my opinion, was Pirates of the Caribbean. The sinking ship is one of the coolest toys I've ever seen on a playfield. So you know, that was an accomplishment for sure. Anyway, you know, so then you know, I'll keep this brief, but we met up at Bally Midway. Again, after he came back to do Special Force, and we ended up working together on Party Animal. I kind of brought the idea to another designer, and Dennis overheard me when that other designer said, "No thanks, I don't want to do a game about parties or animals." So I said, "Okay," and so Dennis overheard that conversation. He goes, I like that idea. I think I'll do something like that. So Pat McMahon was always really good at cartoony animals and stuff like that. So it seemed a natural fit to tie Pat McMahon's artwork onto this project. So we worked together with Pat and developed Party Animal, and it started a whole slew of games that Dennis and I have worked together on. When we got over to Williams from Bally, so in 1988, Bally got sold to Williams, and we were like furniture, and we got sold with the company, and so, but we were able then, Williams was really supportive of bringing the Bally people in. It wasn't too combative with the Williams people and the Bally people. It was pretty good synergy. And Williams was also very open to new ideas and generating better, fresher ideas for pinball. So they let us experiment quite a bit, I think, and it really paid off. So we started working on Dr. Dude, but before that, we got the Elvira license. First time that Williams got a license. So Bally had licenses in their past, but never at Williams. So we were excited to work on the first licensed game for Williams.
I just want to say something quick about Party Animal. That was the hardest game for me to design because I used up all my ideas on Special Force on my first game. I thought, what the hell am I going to do now? So Greg helped out with the Party Animal theme. And at that time, the Party Animal phrase was very popular in everything, print and... Okay, I'm done.
All right. So collectively, party games, you know, became this thing, and Williams kept allowing us to, you know, use our wacky sense of humor.
We didn't plan this. It just kind of happened.
Just kind of happened. And we, you know, like Dr. Dude, we always wanted to tell a story on the back glass. You know, instead of just a one static image, we wanted to try like a comic book theme and develop that. I think we had the chance to do Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as a license at that point. And I told Dennis, I wasn't sure if it was right for pinball, so why don't we just develop our own comic book and comic book story. And so we went ahead with Dr. Dude. So we were happy to have that chance. Excuse me. And Steve Kordek listened to our pitch at an engineering meeting, and God bless Steve Kordek. After the pitch for Dr. Dude, he said, I don't know what the hell you guys are talking about, but go ahead, it sounds good to me. So thank you, Steve, for allowing us to indulge our craziness. And then, of course, Scared Stiff became more infamous because of the timing that we did this game. Pinball had already started its decline, and once again, and so Dennis unfortunately got laid off on what we call Black Thursday, and our career at that point had ended. Our career together had ended. I stayed at Williams until Pinball 2000 saw the light of day, and then I went to work for Midway doing video games for a while. So. That kind of sums up our career that led to us forming Whizbang Pinball.
And I went to IGT for a while designing slot machines.
But
pinball was way more fun. So fortunately, I was able to go back to Stern, and that's when I did Pirates, my very first game after 5 or 6 years of designing pinball games.
So we hadn't seen each other for a while. We met up again at the Northwest Pinball Show. In 2009, and I had talked to a lot of people there because I had been out of pinball now since 1999, so it had been 10 years since I had had anything to do with a pinball machine, and I heard a lot of people talking about, like, you know, different ideas for pinball and stuff like that, and there was, you know, Stern was, you know, still there, but still not making, you know, any progress into the market, and we, you know, I just wanted to get my hands dirty in pinball again. I wanted to get back into it and see what it was like. So I kept hearing people talk about custom games, and I thought, wow, wouldn't it be cool to, like, do art for, like, a completely custom game? This is the oldest joke in the world, and I keep using it, so I'm sorry if you heard it before. But we were in Seattle, and I was up all night thinking about what custom game I could come up with. And so, of course, I was up all night in Seattle. I was sleepless in Seattle. Anyway, so the next morning, we had breakfast at the Cafe Mecca. And we had, you know, it was a good breakfast, you know, patty melt, fries, of course. and probably a beer too. But before we flew home, I presented this idea to Dennis. I said, you know, we haven't worked together for a while, and I have this idea. So I'd really like to think about this, you know. And when I presented the idea of doing a custom game together, he seemed pretty happy about it. So we flew home really fast that day because we had all these ideas that were we literally had like a piece of paper on the airplane, and we were just jotting down ideas for themes and directions and stuff like that.
We used up a lot of napkins.
Yeah, a lot of napkins. But anyway, and when we got home, we really wanted to move this thing forward. But first, we have to have a flashback to kind of tell the story a little bit better. In 2006, we were at the Art of Pinball show. We hadn't seen each other since 1997. We met again in 2006 in downstate Illinois at the Art of Pinball show, which was a great show that was curated by a museum down there. And so at that show, Dennis saw a game that he liked because it was retro.
And the cabinet was weird. And yeah. I didn't know much about EMs at that time, but I like weird things. That's why I work with Greg a lot.
So he ended up buying this Continental Cafe in 2006 and storing it in his garage.
And when the guy delivered it, the back glass was broken.
Yeah.
So, and it was a beautiful back glass, too.
So that sat in his garage from 2006. So when we thought about doing a custom game, he goes, well, why don't we just like reskin an EM? I've got an EM in my garage that we could use. The back glass is busted. Why don't we just reskin an EM? And I said, yeah, sure. That sounds like the artist is doing all the work, you know? So I said, maybe we should design a new play field around it. So anyway, the first step we had to do was take this game in 2009 to somebody that knew what they were doing with it. So we found out about Team EM, and we called our local Team EM guide, Ken Walker, and we called him the doctor because he diagnosed the problem. The game wasn't running, so he diagnosed the problem within a half an hour and got the game running again. So that's why we pull in experts. We're design guys. You know, he's a game designer, I'm an artist, product designer, whatever you want to call us. But we don't have the expertise to bring an EM game back to life. So, you know, we got this help and plenty of help from other people that wanted to see our vision come to life. So we're more than happy with all the help that we got on the project from start to finish.
Another one of the reasons we chose an EM game, because we knew we couldn't afford a programmer to do a solid state game. So we just went with what we thought we could do.
Yeah, because programmers are expensive.
Yeah.
I took a picture of the inside of the cabinet here because the date looks like a person on the factory line, you know, marked it with the date and their initials to say that everything was okay from his point of view.
1956,
or
if you can't see it.
Or her point of view, as the case may be. So that was cool. And actually, this other picture of buttons on the side of the cabinet, we actually brought that into the production game as well. On the bottom arch, there's a smaller version of that just to remind people that the buttons are on the side of the cabinet, even though by now we don't usually have to remind people. So about a couple months, maybe a month after we got back from Seattle, Dennis called me. He goes, I got a great idea. You got to come out here. I want to pitch this to you. So I went out by Dennis, and he said, so, you know, I've loved Fruit Crate label art for years, and I know you do too. And you know, it's just such a beautiful, rich history of advertising art that, you know, I think we need to capitalize on this with a theme. And old pinball art, classic pinball art by guys like Roy Parker, where everybody on the back glass is having a good time. Everybody's smiling. Everybody's happy. There's no death and destruction. It's all about having a good time. And we, you know, Of course, we both appreciate fine pinup art too. Man, those peas are popping today. So these influences are what led Dennis to the next step. You know, we brought our expertise together in art and hammering, and we created Wonelli Big Juicy Melons. So his pitch was, here's the cabinet. What do you think? And I was like, well, what do you mean? What do I think? That's cool. You know, it's like unlike anything I had ever seen before in pinball. And when you look at it and go back to Dennis's cabinet that he brought to Bally, it all kind of makes sense because that had a pedestal on it. And it kind of comes full circle with that cabinet.
We wanted to make it look like a bunch of old stacked up fruit crates.
Like a farmer had, you know, pinball machine parts and fruit crates and just put it all together into a package. So I started working on artwork while he started working on further ideas, and it's what we call the garage phase. So, there was a lot of work, a lot of effort on all counts here. Dennis had to take the cabinet and strip it down. He decided to change it from a slanted pinball cabinet to a straight crate so it would feel and look more like a fruit crate shape. So it's now rectangular, which led to other problems. He wanted to weather all of the wood to make it look like it came from a weathered fruit crate.
One of the major problems, this Continental Cafe had a manual ball serve, and there was a groove in the side of the cabinet to allow the ball come up to the play field. And when I cut down the top of the cabinet to make it square, it changed the geometry of that groove. So I had to plug the groove, I had to cut out and form wood, plug the groove, and reroute. I had to buy a special router bit and reroute the groove, and set up jigs and fixtures, and I was all set up and I was ready to go. I had a plunge router, and I had forgotten to set the stop on the plunge router and just plunged it right through the cabinet. Thank goodness my leg wasn't there, because I've been known to do things like that to myself.
And the outdoor shot on the left there, that was Dennis's workspace to weather the wood. So he had chains
and I just beat it all up. I stomped on it in the gravel just to make it look old and worn, sanded it, torched it with a torch to raise the grain, and then sanded it again and then stained it.
So a lot of blood, sweat, and tears went into the four cabinets that we ended up building, or that Dennis ended up building for the game. And you know,
building one was fun. Building four of the same thing wasn't nearly as much fun.
Right. And that's when we started learning that we are designers, not production people. So this is taking shape before we took it to the Expo, Chicago Expo, in 2009, in the fall of 2009. So we started making progress from the June Seattle show to the show in Chicago in the fall.
These are real fruit crate labels too that I found on the internet. They were very risque at the time.
Right. So, we picked up on that a little bit and wanted to have fun with it. This shows the base crate in its early stages before we put the 2x4 on it to get the right rake of the angle of the pinball machine. This is kind of the old back box from Continental Cafe, just placed on top of the fruit crate versions. So it's beginning to take more shape. My artwork started to come together with the Wonelli logo and the backlash taking more shape. This is another Continental Cafe that we bought for the four games that we built, just showing how over the years things change, right? That has a complete different patina than it does, if it would have been just left alone. So somebody
went to a lot of trouble to put all that pink on there.
Yeah. So this is definitely where we needed more help. So Mark Wayna, we worked with at Williams, instrumental in helping us get this together. He is an EM collector, and he knows EMs back and forth. So he said the great thing about EMs, when they're 100 years old, you can still get them working again. So he was instrumental in being able to rewire everything for the game. He was also instrumental in the game layout. When Dennis came in on the left here with his first layout, which was a little more open, and it didn't have a shot to the top.
When I designed this, at the time, to my knowledge, there weren't any wood rails that had return lanes. And return lanes are what give people control in pinball and allow you to make a lot of shots. So the first thing I wanted to do was put return lanes on the game, so you can see that on the bottom. And the top, when we played our first, when they got the EM Continental Cafe running, it wasn't really very powerful, and I don't even think you could make a shot back to the top.
And it had three gobble holes.
And it had three gobble holes, too. So this was my first layout. I took out the three gobble holes, and I just left one in the middle, and I moved the two melon targets, one on the left and one on the right. Well, so then Mark convinced me, and I had the pop bumpers kind of all spread out. Mark convinced me that, because I didn't think I would get good action like you do on a modern game with the pop bumpers close together. But Mark convinced me that he thought you could, and that I ought to try to put a shot back to the top in the game. So that's what makes the game more playable and more fun than a standard EM game.
And slightly more modern. So once we established the layout, then it was a matter of taking the Continental Cafe wiring and bringing it all into the new layout. So again, we're just showing progress as we moved forward, experimenting with color design on the cabinet side. This was a 50-50 choice. Do we go with red? Do we go with blue? And then we voted, people in my family helped vote on it and stuff. So we ended
up... Go back to that cabinet a bit. I think the first four games we built, we painted the entire interior of the cabinet melon color.
Right.
Were they all built from Continental Cafe boxes?
Yeah, I cut down, all four of them were Continental Cafe boxes that I cut down and rebuilt.
We kind of referred to it as kind of hot rodding, just taking an old car and making it something cooler and different and something more fun to drive. So we brought a first flipping Whitewood to Wisconsin in 2010. We got a pretty good reception. We also met Kerry Imming, the guy standing looking at the camera, so to speak, here in this shot. He became instrumental in helping us design the system that runs the solid state games that we built. And it's a bus system, modular, so very, very similar to a direction that Stern went in as well. And we had Roger Sharp flipping it at that Milwaukee show. And we got a pretty good response. People really wanted to see what this game was all about. So we were excited after Milwaukee. But, we sold the four games that we built. We talked to our buyers and said, we've got a lot of response to this. What would you think if we took it, if we, tried to get it made in production? Would you guys be okay with that? Because we know you're spending money on the four games we built, but are you okay if we take this to a bigger audience? And all four of them were like, yes, we're cool with that. In fact, maybe someday that'll make our hand-built games worth more to some collector. So we were again happy that we had all this support to get this thing done. So now we're going to jump to taking this to Stern and convincing them that this was a good idea to go to production with. So the first thing we had to do was get Gary on board. So I did this caricature, and I don't think that's what won him over, but he definitely liked the idea. He saw the value in something completely unique, and so he got on board pretty fast. The other person that was instrumental at the beginning was George Gomez. I've told people this already, but George, I said, how much are we going to have to dumb this down to make it work for production? And he said, we're not going to dumb it down at all. We're going to try to make it as close as to the game that you guys built in your garage, because it is so unique, it needs to live that way.
We were concerned they wanted to put it in just a plain old Stern cabinet.
Right.
And but when we approached this, we thought we were just doing a work of art. We thought we were doing four games and that was it. So we sort of considered it just a work of art.
So
beehive, one of those Steve Young beehives that the shooter rod goes through.
Yes, yeah. So there were issues with it. The ball lift mechanism was one thing that we wanted to get rid of, because too many people didn't understand that you have to work to get the ball to the shooter. So we definitely got rid of that for production. And the gobble hole is now an eject to back to the bumpers. So those two things were the biggest considerations going to production, because we want this to be street operated too, and we want modern players to understand how to play it. So those two factors were important to us.
We went away from the gobble hole because the shows we took it to, nobody understood what was happening. They thought, where's my ball? What happened to it?
Right.
There are a few collectors that are disappointed that we took it out, but we had to do it.
Yeah. This guy was instrumental. He's one of our buyers. He lives in Morton, Illinois, which is pumpkin capital of the world. So we did a special standee for him. But he allowed us to keep this game in my office at Stern for 2 years. So we're very happy that he was so generous to let us use that game. Another big factor in getting this from the garage to the Stern shop is Tom Copera. He's our mechanical designer on the project, and to make sure that this was manufacturable and the cabinet was manufacturable, Tom did a wonderful job on sweating the details and getting everything, including the reels, motor-driven reels to fruition. He had some work in slot machines, so he understood stepper drivers running reels, and so that helped a lot.
It's interesting you had to go from take a commercial product and make more of an artistic product,
right,
and change it back into a commercial product.
Exactly.
Didn't we just do this already in the other direction?
But Stern did an incredible job on the cabinet, because to me it looks almost identical to the handmade cabinets that I built.
We couldn't be happier with the result. When it first came to Stern, John Trudeau had just started working with Stern, and he brought it from Dennis's AutoCAD drawing to SolidWorks. So, thanks to John for bringing that to reality. As progress develops, the white wood is the first thing we see to make sure that everything works. Obviously, just to take this picture, we put standard Stern flippers on it, but we are using the retro flippers, the short flippers.
You can see the eject hole, the metal stop right behind the eject hole. We had so many problems with trying to get the ball to stay in that hole and not bounce out that we finally took that metal stop off and built a metal tunnel, so the ball goes back in the tunnel and then it rolls into the hole. I would have loved to have a target in the back of the tunnel so you'd get a sound as soon as it went in, but there was just no room for that.
And there's proof. There's proof that there was a light bulb under that plastic at one time, but now it's the darkest plastic on the play field, so there may be a mod for that someday. This is a beauty shot of Dennis's cabinet with crushed beer can and all in place, and
that's for fine tuning the level.
Right. So we really, this was a big factor, like we've said, in getting the look and feel of this project to production. So we had to start working on the cabinet with Tom, and we call this the stealth cabinet, because it came in painted all black for whatever reason.
What's the only color Churchill has?
So
it's like Model T's, any color you want.
Right. So we brought that in.
That may be proprietary, but you were able to get Churchill to build your cabinet in a way that Stern could use it.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's not totally Churchill. There was an outside company that does the wood trim.
The finish.
And distresses. Churchill finishes the trim.
Okay.
But an outside company did the distressing. I think they ran it through some kind of big wire brush machine. And then Churchill has to do a little bit of sanding on it. And then Churchill stained it. And then Churchill attaches it to the basic wood cabinet. So Churchill learned a lot of new stuff, too, while they were doing it. And they bitched about it the whole way.
Did they make the play field?
Yeah, Churchill did the play field, too, and the screening.
Yep. So as every step, this is so unique to Stern that we had to test every little thing to make sure the play field fit in the cabinet. And it just wasn't the standard operating procedure.
There's a new apron on the bottom.
Right. Yeah, everything about it was pretty new, except for flipper mechs and that kind of thing. And I got a picture, a placeholder of Spike, the Spike system in this cabinet, just that's Spike up there.
The frame was new, or the metal cabinet too? The frame on the side, was that metal or wood?
That's all wood.
It's all wood. Everything is wood. There's no metal trim or anything.
Yeah, all wood.
Okay. And just the front step, too?
Yeah.
Or the front lock?
Yep.
The front lockdown bar, that's wood, too.
All wood.
And actually, what we've noticed is that feels really nice to play that game and to hold on to that wood instead of the cold metal. It just has a nice, warm feeling to it.
There's a lot of behind-the-scenes people, that don't get the limelight that we do as designers. If you ever bought a game from Stern and had talked through issues, Pat Powers might have been on the phone with you. He's great at customer service. Dave Cadeau, the guy facing us, works in our build-up lab and does that every day, all day, and gets games from white wood to flippable. Raina Cortez, she designs the wiring harnesses for all of Stern games. And Paul Mandeltort, who is no longer with the company, he came to Stern for a while, and he's off on another adventure now. But Paul's dad runs the Marco booth out here, so he's a great guy, and Marco is great for Stern because they really do a great job representing Stern games for us at these kind of shows. As we move forward with the project, we learned that there was modifications that would be made. One of them was the size of the back glass changed slightly. So we had to increase the height a little bit to match what Tom had designed for the back box. So it turned out not to be as big a deal as I thought when he told me that the back glass had to change size, but I worked it out, and everything worked out fine.
We didn't mention this, but on the earlier, if you remember, the Continental Cafe backglass had two sets of score reels in it for a two-player game. And I said, since we thought we were just doing a work of art, I said, Greg, let's just make it a one-player so you have more room for art. And Greg liked that idea.
And I did. But then as we went into production, it was like, hey, we can make this a four-player game. And we're like, oh, good. Yeah, let's do it. So kind of late in the progress, but there's all these things that come up and that you learn as you design as well. So this is just another thing to show the first base crate that came in from Churchill to make sure everything fit, everything was working together. Press-proofing the back glass. I couldn't be, as an artist and art director, I couldn't be happier with the results of the printing of this back glass. We printed it on glass with two hits of color to really juice it up for our for our lighting system, and I couldn't be happier. It's just a really rich back glass. I'm not talking just the art. I'm talking about the printing of it. So there's quality built in. Everything that we did, we tried to maintain the quality aspect of this game so that the price tag that you see once you see it and play it and feel it, you realize, wow, this is really a quality piece. We started getting wood samples in from the wood vendor with stain colors that we wanted. We got a load of wood in here, and that was the morning that Stern woke up with wood. And then we go over to Churchill and we start working with the Churchill guys to make sure that they understand what they're putting together from the drawings that Tom sent them. This is a shot of the weathered trim getting ready to put on the cabinets. Dennis was making sure that these guys knew what was going on, telling them, you know, things that needed to be improved. I'm going to take a step back here. Brad Grant from California was the first guy to build his own homegrown version. He had bought a back glass, a play field, plastics. These were leftover parts that we had from Whiz Bang that we printed a slight overage to get the right price of the play fields and everything that we needed. So we sold off, to help fund our project, we sold off a lot of that art-related parts. And so that, and then we learned that people wanted to build their own. And so Brad Grant was the first person to be able to successfully put his own EM version of Wonelli together. This is our three games, the three solid state games, all lined up in Dennis's garage. Just to show you again the arc from garage to Stern. We did a photo shoot, unfortunately, in November. Chuck was instrumental. Chuck right here from Spooky Pinball was instrumental in getting us a model that slightly resembled Melanie. So we went out on a nice day in November and worked very quickly to get these shots. Again, people pitching in just to help get everything accomplished for us.
Go back to the poster a second. That's the actual truck that's in the back glass.
Yeah, that's a friend of mine's truck.
And the girl is actually my wife's boss's daughter.
Wife's boss's daughter.
And they had kind of, do you know anybody that would fit the part of Melanie? And I'm like, yeah, but there's no way in hell I'm asking her. So my wife Katie asked her, and she was all for it.
Nice. Again, this is Stern. This is the first prototypes being built. They ended up, Churchill miscommunicated somehow, and they put the gray on the back box and the brown on the cabinet. That was not the way we spec'd it out. So the first 6 or 8, 10 cabinets that were built flopped the color choices, and it's most evident in my decal on the front of the cabinet where I have gray slats built in, but they're against a brown cabinet. So in the future, there will be about 10 cabinets floating around out there that are backwards from the rest of production. The play fields were great. We got it's an 11 color spot color play field, not a 4 color process play field. So again, quality built in to this project. We took a different direction on many of the parts for this game.
What was the last game that had that many screens?
I can't remember. I don't know. At Stern?
Ever. Any company?
At Williams, it would have been either Star Wars, the Episode One game, or Revenge from Mars. So, yeah.
So you built a game counter as well. Is that a stepper motor there?
Yeah, that's a stepper motor also.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's the credit wheel.
Credit wheel.
Yep. And so here's Dennis at the factory still putting some final touches on the lockdown bar for the first games that got photoshot or went to Las Vegas or Texas for the first showing of the production games. This is the three of us, Mark and Dennis and I, on the line, just making sure that things are going well out there. Bigfoot showed up and put his stamp of approval on things. Again, behind the scenes people that don't always get notoriety, Don Thorne runs our factory and does a great job. And here he's pointing out something that he sees to a line worker, you know, making sure that everything's going well. Al Dale is in charge of operations for Stern, And, you know, he's a great guy, and we have a lot of fun working together with him. And here's Tom screwing together the IKEA-style base crate. It should take, if you read the instructions when you put one of these together, it should take you about 40 minutes to put it together. So hopefully it doesn't lead to too much frustration.
So that was the bottom of the crate or the top?
That's the bottom.
The base crate is...
So it actually got one for leg levelers too?
Oh, yes.
It has leg levelers
on
it.
Yeah, we'll point that out.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely has the leg levelers built in for that, so you can adjust the angle. So we debuted these first games in Texas and got a good response down there. And the overarching comment that we hear every time at every show is, wow, this is more than what I expected. And we couldn't be happier hearing that comment.
Are the legs wood or steel?
The leg levelers are metal.
Metal.
We'll show a detail shot of that in a minute.
Would we be able to match the old-fashioned aspect?
All right. When
it's on legs?
Yeah, when it's on legs, it's metal.
Standard stern legs.
Right. This is a interesting use of the crate for when you're playing for dollars. and it is a great game for that. This is a great shot of the production line of the reels, going back to reel pinball. This is just a good shot of all the play fields. This is the final test line at the Melrose Park facility. What's that?
Did you design the reel, or was that from another company?
No, we designed those and injection molded the reel itself.
Those are all new parts. And this is the end of the line at the Melrose.
It's
all original.
Retooled.
Yeah.
This is one of the last days at the Melrose Park facility, as all the lines are gone. And there's a few Wonellies getting put together still. And this was the last game at Melrose, Wonelli. So we got that going for us.
Did you number that game? Do you know where that game is?
You mean that? Oh, no, that's just the date. I think Mark has...
Mark has dibs on there.
Yeah. Well, not dibs.
Does Mark Poynton work for Stern now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. These are the first cabinets coming into Elk Grove Village facility. The first play fields in Elk Grove. This is Jack Benson, our programmer. He's a young programmer. And the funny thing about working with millennials is they know that we're old. We know that he's young. And we work together pretty well. So we have that mutual respect for each other, and he's got a lot to learn, but he's done a great job of bringing the code to where it is today, and he's patient with us, and we're as patient with him as we can be, so it's all working out pretty well. Barty is our final test line person. She's
the one on the right.
She's the one on the right. She's very good at pulling everything together at the end to make sure we're always getting called out to the line by Barty. Hey, is this really supposed to be like this? So she does all of Stern's final testing.
Sometimes she'll stop the line when she sees something she doesn't like, and they get pissed at her, but she stays firm in her belief that shouldn't go out.
Yep, she catches a lot of stuff that doesn't need to go out.
Does she have a sister that needs a job?
I'll ask.
I don't understand how crucial that is.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, she's invaluable.
Absolutely.
Because she cares.
On production, was there a limit on another?
No, it's not a limited edition. It's considered a niche product, but not necessarily a limited edition. So we've run about 150 games so far to date, but as long as there's demand, we'll build games.
To that end, does Stern's expanded production facility allow them to do that more so?
There's definitely more room for two lines now. Yeah. So for games like Medieval Madness Remake and what Gary is referring to, Wonelli, is a studio game. hopefully we'll see more and more of that as we move forward. Going back to behind the scenes people, Stephen Martin is my right-hand man. I mean, he gets a lot of stuff done for production art and also for advertising art for Jody and marketing. So he's a workhorse and gets a lot of work done that I don't have time to do. We have, you know, we work with a variety of people for audio and voiceover talent. Sometimes we actually get actors from the movies or TV shows to help us out. In this case, it's a non-licensed theme, so we had, you know, a lot of leverage to move to whoever we would want to move with. And so we chose Jerry Thompson. He's a pinball aficionado. He's a collector himself.
From Seattle.
He lives in Seattle. We've gotten to be good friends with Jerry. So he did some work on Mustang that was great. The old Mustang commercials from the 60s where the voiceover just went, Mustang, you know, so I can't do it, but he does a great job at it on the game. So after Mustang, we said, hey, let's get together and work on this. So he plays the role of Leroy Mellon, and that's Papa Leroy, Melanie's father. He's a little surly, and he might sound like, you know, he doesn't understand what you're doing, or, you know, he doesn't like what you're doing all the time, but that's okay. You know, he'll get through it. And then we found Jessica Rowe through Jerry Thompson. She's from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and we listened to a variety of voiceover talent for the female character Melanie, and her voice was just perfect for this. So here's a sample.
You're about as sharp as a pinball.
If you played the game, you probably heard that one already. And then
lighten up, Daddy. Lighten up, Daddy.
Lighten up, Daddy. So the most amazing part of while you're working on a project is things happen like spontaneously. And Jerry asked us, he goes, I got a friend that would love to do a voice in your game. And we said, well, we got kind of a drunk guy at the bottom of the playfield. Maybe we could use a drunk guy. And he said, yeah, I know the perfect guy. And it turned out it's more, Rodney has become more of the guy on the back glass. So the guy in the back glass is the daytime version of Rodney. The guy at the bottom of the playfield is the evening version after the work is done. So he plays both roles here, and we felt he did an awesome job on
he became
this.
You can hear him in the game a lot. He became very important in the game because when we got the files in for his sound, we were just rolling on the floor laughing at all his stuff.
So it was very, you know, like I said, spontaneously, all of a sudden we've got a character, and it really brings a lot of personality besides Papa Leroy and the DJ that Jerry does. It just brings so much more to the game. So I don't know if I lost it now. Yep, I did.
I love Big Melons and I cannot lie.
So obviously we had fun with all this. Anyway, a lot of people have, you know, they have questions about, well, what is that crate about? What am I seeing there? So besides the IKEA style of putting this thing together, we have rubber engine mounts that create kind of the English that you need for this game.
The cabinet is not fastened solidly to the base. It has these rubber mounts between the cabinet and the base, so you can give it a little nudging.
But it's still solid in design that it's not going to fall off or anything like that. So we wanted to point out these rubber mounts to show that when it's not on legs, there's still plenty of vibration in there that you can give it to give it the English that this style of game needs to be played. And also, as we talked about earlier, it has leg levelers on the base crate. So you can still set this up at the pitch that you prefer. and get it to the right pitch. And speaking of pitch, we had put a decal on below the
lockdown bar
that suggested 4 degrees, but that's much too flat. This should be pitched at 5.5 to 6 degrees. And if you're really good, you might want to put it at 7. But the one out on the floor is around 5.5, between 5.5 and 6 right now. Plays pretty good, plays pretty solid. So if you end up getting a game, you'll notice that 4 degrees is too flat unless you want it to play like a true EM. We're really happy that people are operating these games. Attaball put it out there at 25 cents a play.
In Seattle,
and they're having great results with it. We hope that some people can put it at 50 cents a play, or maybe $1 a play, but since it looks like an old game, I think some people want to keep the vibe of affordability while you're playing it on location. The game is available now, so contact either your local distributor. Talk to Marco Specialties out here on the floor, but since JJ is here, if you have an interest, talk to JJ and see if you can work something out with him. Also, we're going to put out service bulletins soon. The first 74 games that got built, not everything goes perfectly when you start building production games. So the first 74 games built did not go out with these
cabinet pieces.
Right.
When you have the game on legs, these pieces have holes in them for the bolts for the legs. If you put the game on the crate, you don't want those ugly holes sitting there. So you can, there's just 3 screws in the back of these that hold these on, so you can put these on when the game is on the crate, then you don't have the holes. Some people have suggested that they like the holes because then they can put a cup holder on each side of the game. Right, so it'll be up to you.
Yeah, you can opt to use these or not. But
if you don't know, the game comes both with legs and the crate, so you can set it up any way you want.
Absolutely. And so this kit will go out this week, and if you already own one of these games, you can contact your distributor, give them your serial number, and you'll get an uncrushed beer can, Wonelli branded beer can, and as well as updated code for your game. So that'll come with the kit.
The code's easy to change. It's just an SD card. You pop the old one out and pop the new one in.
Right.
You're done.
And as an example, the game on the floor is one of those first 74 games. But it has updated code that I brought and put in there today.
So what kind of beer does the drunk character recommend that you press his hand?
Well, obviously, this is it right here, Wonelli, Summer Blonde Ale. So we hope to someday land an agreement with a brewery to actually produce this. So we're working on that. You can get branded stuff over at the Barco booth. Hopefully you can also get it on the Stern shop. Unfortunately, we've already run out of mugs and pint glasses, so we don't have those available right now, but we will soon have those available. We're even thinking about doing the
Mason jar
glasses, because I think that'll fit better with the theme. So,
you're going to sell the cans?
We're going to sell the cans as well, yeah.
Empty cans?
Yeah, because the fallout of crushing them, we don't always get a perfect crush and we have to destroy them because they might have a sharp edge on them. But so because we don't know how many we'll have left, but when we know where we're at, we'll definitely sell those on the website, and those might be a little more limited. But anyway, you know, we appreciate you coming. If you have any questions, we'll be here all day. We hope to see you tonight at the event that Dan put together for us. So we appreciate everybody's help that helped get this to the line. And of course we thank all of our supporters that have seen this through for the number of years that we've been, you know, working on this and bringing it to the production level that it's at. So if you want classic swag, we still get Pinball Life still carries some of our product line. And we'll continue to provide t-shirts and stuff. But Stern Pinball will eventually have more stuff on their site. Thanks for listening. If you have any other questions, you know, we'll be happy to answer them.
You've built 150 machines?
So far. Yeah. So far, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you'll have them. Do you think there's a market outside of the U.S.?
Yes. Our Italian distributor got 6 games on their first order, and they sold those out within a week. So there are other distributors that think it should be in a standard cabinet, and we don't, because it is what it is. It's a unique piece that needs to stay a unique piece.
Seems like that would be a really great home game, better than the pin that people can put in their basements and,
right,
you know, pool room or whatever they have.
Yeah, you know, and we get pushback on theme. Because it's a little risque. We tried to keep it as PG-13 as possible, but we do get pushback on that. So for the overarching home market, it wouldn't appeal to every home basement buyer. So
I don't really get that, and I probably never will, but to us it's just humor, and it's not. I don't even think it's objectifies women or sexist or whatever people say. If you look at the back glass, you can see that Melanie is the one with all the power. It's her farm. She hires all these men, and all she's doing is saying, hey, watch this. Watch what I can do to these guys. And she takes two of her melons and holds them up, and the men act like idiots. I mean, the men are the ones that are the fools on the back glass. And that's just my point of view.
And my...
Huh?
Is there a limit on order? Do people that are interested, you know, what do they typically order? Just one at a time? Or
there's no limit. Orders? If you want to order 500, we'd be happy to accommodate.
It's really nice design, so.
Oh, thank you.
The reel, I was concerned.
Since it's not electromechanical, it's designed just like a slot machine reel, and those things last forever, so we don't expect any problems with this.
We did a lot of time testing on it. We had the reels in a test unit that just kept going and going and going for weeks, months. That test unit is still being tested, and so far no failures. It's all good, and we even did heat testing. So that test unit is in a box to make sure that the closed environment heat conditions don't have an adverse effect on it as well.
Was there different art or production methods with the back glass between what was in Texas and what's here? It looked brighter here to me.
There shouldn't be any different. The Texas games were prototypes. This game is actual the screen play field. We had digital play fields at Texas. So I think the color on the screen play field is even better than the digital play field. So it maybe that's what you're seeing. And then the gray wood versus the brown wood on the main cabinet, that's kind of brighter too. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there maybe. Yes, sir?
Code update. You said you just updated the code update. Is there another one down the line?
Yes. George is giving us... another opportunity to do one more code update. So Dennis has been play testing like crazy at his studio and seeing things that he wants better between choreography and rules and everything. This code that's here is pretty close, yeah, for rule set and stuff like that, but we're gonna make a few more adjustments and get the choreography a little more refined as well, and get more fun built into the code. So we're pretty close with this one, but we're going to do one more round of final tweaking, and then testing, and then probably release that down the road, and that can be updated through USB.
We're going to add a reward for a shot from the right flipper between the bumpers and up through the lane. If you make that shot, there's going to be a big reward for that.
Back there?
With the bumpers designed specifically for your lane?
They're standard Stern bumpers, but we remolded the Daisy bumper caps.
Right. And then we inserted plastic in there to theme it to this particular game. The other thing I want to say, you just reminded me, with the spike system, all of the solenoids can be adjusted. GI lighting can be adjusted. So everything is very adjustable with the spike system. So if you want the game to play more like an EM, you know, you can set the game down flatter, and you can adjust the flipper power, the bumper power, the eject from the, you know, back into the bumpers. All that is controllable now. And we even have a plan, as we get more units in the field, we have plans for a possible topper, interactive topper, and also we want to...
Bells, chimes.
Yeah, we want to get bells. For the EM purists out there, we have wiring available for bells or chimes, and if our kit comes together, or when it comes together, it'll have a cowbell as well. So these things, to make it really more like an EM, are in the plans, but we're waiting for more units to get out in the field to make it worth our while to tool up anything that we need to tool or anything. But I could, if you're interested, I have, I can show you how it's already in the code for the bells to work. I have a solenoid that I can hook up to the where it's wired in for a bell and at least show you that the solenoid is working from the code. So
this game has a real knocker too. It's not that horrible Stern screech on their game. This one is satisfying.
Any idea what the window of opportunity is for ordering? How long is Stern gonna take orders?
We're not salespeople, you know, and so the word I hear from our guys is, you know, we don't know how long this is gonna last. We don't know what the reaction is gonna be. And like I said, the more we get out to shows, the more we hear people say, "Wow, this is more than I thought it was going to be," and they're not talking about the price; they're talking about the value, right?
Well, I mean, it's more than we thought.
Everybody said it's more than we thought, right? So that was a problem early on, but now as we move forward, people are realizing that there's actual value built in, and so we hope we can, you know, cross that bridge with everybody and get more people to realize what it is. So yeah, they're telling us, well, we don't know how long the demand will last. So, you know, get your money in now, you know. So, you know, that's all I can tell you. You know, we're not great at sales, but we do what we do, and that's what we do best, and we let our salespeople, our distributors, handle it from there. So,
sorry. Okay. Big question.
Yep.
So, this, you guys have worked on other platforms, WPC and Old Valley stuff, and here you had an opportunity to work with Spike. How'd that experience go? You didn't write the code, but you got to see the code being implemented on a whole new.
Well, we loved it, of course, because it allowed it to do so much more than we did even with our solid-state games that we hand-built. And so we were thrilled that we have way more speech and sounds and music in this game.
It was an easier development environment, and you could try things out.
Right, yeah, right.
Yeah, if Jack was here, he'd be able to answer that much better. So someday we'll get him to a show so he can answer that more fluently than we can. To us, it's transparent. And to us, code is like some kind of voodoo that you guys do, you know? And it's like, you just sit there and type, and then stuff happens, and it's like, wow. I think the spike system is, as more and more of it is unveiled, as we develop it further, I think it's gonna allow for a lot more development for those guys, the technical guys, to do better stuff and do it faster and all that kind of stuff. So the good thing was we got a lot of speech in this game because we don't have dot matrix animations taking up any kind of space. So we said, let's just keep putting more speech in so the home buyer doesn't have to hear the same stuff over and over and over. So even this code, we hope to have more speech opened up once the final code comes out.
So for example, the skill shot, you don't hear the same speech call each time. There's seven or eight different speech calls, and they're just called randomly, so you never get tired of.
But right now, you do hear, you're about as sharp as a pinball a little too often, so we're gonna fine-tune that a little bit so we don't get anybody mad.
There was a question.
Oh.
As technology changes and so forth, do you see the reel staying there for the most part, or do you see yourself changing it out? Is it made of steel or metal? What does that look like?
The reels are made of injection molded plastic, and of course the stepper motors are made of metal, and it's all metal brackets that holds it all together. Wone Alley will always have reels. We won't replace the reels in Wone Alley. If we use them in the future, we don't know.
When you did your initial EM prototypes,
I doubt it. That's
did it
questions.
Take a tremendous amount of time to get the two or three or four
that
play identical?
Well, there was only one EM. Yeah, and then three solid state. No, to my opinion, I like the solid states better than the EM. They play faster, snappier.
Yeah, everything.
They've
reacts,
got sounds and music.
Everything reacts faster, and we were able to put music in. Now the EM, the guy that purchased the EM, we had both games available, and he played both at Pinball Expo in Chicago for like 3 hours. He kept going back and forth to try to make his decision of which one he wanted. And he knew there was benefits to either one, but he ended up choosing the more one-of-a-kind, the original one, probably because, you know, he's more of like that kind of collector, you know. He appreciates the one-offs, the unusuals. And to this day, it sits next to his Zingy Bingy game. So there you go. He likes the one-offs. So, yes.
Although the game's obviously entirely retro in feel and play style, it's actually the first game, I think, from Stern that has an LCD display in it.
I like that. Ladies and gentlemen, that's an announcement. The first game at Stern with an LCD display. How about
it's not
that?
Small, it's the first.
Yeah, we talked about that a couple weeks ago, saying, hey, we should have put that on the brochure.
Tell them why it's so small.
It's so small because at first it was designed to be the operator. We were going to put it inside the coin door, on the coin, you know, inside, so that when you do diagnostics, you could easily just sit there and, you know, make your adjustments and set your settings accordingly. And then somebody said, how is the player in the field going to know what the high score is? Because we ended up putting high score to date on the back glass. And we said, or the replay level, how's the player going to know what the replay level is set at? So we were like, oh yeah, so we have to make this visible now. So now we put it on the bottom arch so that the player could have access to it too. And it's kind of humorous to watch a four-player game because everybody after a ball is like, you know, okay, I'm winning, yeah.
But so, that's what really helped us make it a four-player game.
Right, and the reels do reset for each player, so if you're patient, they'll reset, you know, at the end of the game, but a lot of people don't want to take that time. So, and therein lies the potential for an interactive header that we may eventually develop. I talked to George about it last week, and have some kind of display on a header so that if people are playing four players, they don't have to do this, you know, to read their score. So, the other thing is there's a big magnifying glass. We could just lay it on the glass there. But anyway, that's why it's so small, because it was only meant to be an operator helper at the time. But it grew into something. It didn't grow, but we grew the use of it into something more. Yes, sir.
Just curious, is there a minimum number as far as for Stern to actually do production going forward?
You know, I don't know. I don't have an answer for that.
You're just committed to the 150 to start.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I believe they've released more than 150.
Yeah,
they've just built 150.
Right, there's more parts available now, but it may be 300, but I don't know if that's a break-even point for them. I don't know the behind-the-scenes numbers on that.
Well, I always read about the thing with vendors and the molds and stuff, and you got to have X number before they can do anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I don't. We weren't privy to the behind the scenes numbers of what the break even point was. So, and they are licensing it from WhizBang Pinball. They are not the contract manufacturer like the Medieval Madness project is. They worked out an agreement with WhizBang Pinball to license the property from us. So we still own the intellectual property. We still have rights to do the answer.
If you can call that theme intellectual.
So we still have the rights to the ancillary product or anything else that goes on with the game, but it's not the same deal that Chicago Gaming or Planetary did with the Medieval Madness product. That's Stern being a contract manufacturer for them. Any others?
What are you going to do next?
What do we do next? Wow. That's a great... He's got some ideas going. Maybe not WhizBang, because I'm busy doing what I'm doing at Stern right now, but we're going to see what we can work out. And people have asked, hey, is Stern happy with this? And if so, is there going to be something else? We'll see. You know, we're hoping that this pays off enough for them to go, okay, that was fun and profitable, let's do it again. So we'll see.
I have two more games ready to go, and I won't take deposits. I've developed the games on my own, and I just have to decide maybe who's going to manufacture them. One is it's an original science fiction theme.
One more question back there, maybe?
Yeah, kind of off topic, really. The fiberglass cabinet. The guy
who
put the door back in the
80s.
That's
the
Kiss cabinet?
No, the one that was in that you brought in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The pedestal cabinet. I was looking at that photo. It had like a corrugated base of sorts. It looked like on that. Is there some mechanism that was inside that?
That's where all the hardware was going to be in that game, because there wasn't room in the back glass. So the side portion of that opened up and slid out, and all the computer hardware would have been on that.
If that's it, thanks again. We really appreciate taking your time to listen to us and for staying awake, too. You know, with some of these shows, I see people in the audience, it's like, but, we're not that interesting to begin with. But we thank you all for taking your time.
My games are way more interesting than I am.
So thanks again. We appreciate
it. Thank you.